The Contra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Contra AI.
Welcome, curious listeners. Today we're jumping into, well, a real classic. It's one of those books that can fundamentally shift how you view reality and knowledge itself. Richard Feynman's The Character of Physical Law.
Absolutely. And if you hear physical law and immediately picture, you know, dense textbooks, equations.
Well, balls of math.
Yeah, forget that for now.
Yeah.
Our mission today, it's more about a deep dive into the philosophy of science, really.
Yeah.
As seen by someone who is right there in the thick of it.
Exactly. We're not here to, like, memorize formulas. We're exploring the nature of the laws, their characteristics, the patterns, the principles that kind of govern everything.
From apples falling.
To the absolute weirdness of quantum particles.
Yeah. And this book, it's kind of the ultimate shortcut, wouldn't you say? It gives you this conceptual framework
for understanding the harmony, the symmetry, and let's be honest, the deep mystery that holds the universe together.
It really is a journey he takes you on. Starts familiar, classical, certain, and then gently, or maybe not so gently.
Right. Pushes you toward the strange, the abstract, and the only guides. Elegance and experiment. Nothing else matters.
Okay, so before we dive into the book itself, let's talk about the man. The source material gives us a good picture of Richard Phillips Feynman.
Ah, Feynman, 1918 to 1988, just a giant figure in 20th century physics.
Nobel Prize, 1965, for quantum electrodynamics, QED, foundational stuff.
And people might also know him from, well, other high-profile things. The Manhattan Project, for instance.
Or that very famous, very clear analysis he did for the Challenger disaster investigation, showing the O-ring failure so simply.
That really showcased his other side, didn't it? Because what's fascinating is this sort of dual nature he had.
You explain that.
Well, on one hand, he was a top-tier theoretical physicist.
Yeah.
A creator, you know, deeply involved in developing the laws he came up with Feynman diagrams.
Which basically changed the game for visualizing quantum interactions, right?
Totally. Made incredibly complex calculations, well, manageable. Turned abstract math into pictures, almost.
But then the other side, he was the great explainer.
Exactly. And this book, The Character of Physical Law, it's actually a transcript.
Yeah.
His messenger lectures at Cornell.
So his authority comes from both sides, from doing the physics and explaining it.
Precisely. He could translate the most abstract ideas into language anyone could grasp. Because he understood it so deeply, fundamentally. He used analogies, humor.
Always focusing on the core physical ideas, not just the math.
Right. So the book itself, what's its core mission? What's Feynman trying to do here?
Well, it seems like he wants to illuminate the philosophy, the method of science for, you know, curious folks like us.
Yeah, the layperson. He's basically inviting you to look over a physicist's shoulder.
And appreciate the beauty, right, the aesthetic and intellectual underpinning of it all.
And his core argument, it's that the laws of nature share these defining traits. Simplicity.
Mathematical elegance. Symmetry. Hmm. And maybe the most surprising one for people, inherent uncertainty.
Uncertainty built right in.
Yep. And the process of discovery itself, he frames it as this creative human thing, a cycle.
Okay, what's the cycle?
It's imaginative guessing, then rigorous computation, and finally, absolutely uncompromising experimental verification. Guess, compute, compare.
Guess, compute, compare. I like that. Yeah. And the book follows a path, doesn't it? From concrete to abstract.
Yeah, he starts us off gently. Let's maybe walk through the chapters a bit.
Good idea. Chapter one, he calls it the archetype of law. Right. And he uses gravitation, Newton's law.
The Lachereau, the classic.
Why is that the perfect example for him?
Well, it's incredibly precise, for one. It's mathematically elegant, simple equation, huge impact.
It's universal.
Yeah.
Governs the apple and the moon. Same rules.
And it's predictive. You can calculate orbits, tides. But here's the twist.
There's always a twist with Feynman.
He immediately stresses that even this perfect archetype, it's provisional.
Meaning, Newton was our best guess for ages. Fantastically successful. But then Einstein came along.
And showed that under extreme conditions, like near massive objects or at high speeds, Newton's law needed refining. General relativity.
Exactly. So the real insight isn't just the law itself, but the scientific attitude. A great law is defined by its predictive power.
And our willingness to ditch it the second a reliable experiment contradicts it, no matter how beautiful it seems.
That's the core. Okay, so if the law is the story, what language is it written in? Chapter 2, The Relation of Mathematics to Physics.
This is a deep one. Why math? Why is that the language nature seems to speak? It's kind of weird when you stop and think about it.
It is weird. Feynman argues it's about precision and logical power. Math lets you deduce consequences, follow implications, in a way ordinary language just can't.
Like describing music versus reading the score.
That's a great analogy. The description gives you a feel, but the score is the structure, the detailed instructions. Math provides that rigorous grammar for the cosmos.
Okay, so math is the language. What are the non-negotiable rules it describes? Chapters 3 and 4, conservation and symmetry.
Right. These are the universal constraints. You talked about conservation principles, energy, momentum, charge.
The universe's bookkeeping rules, basically. Stuff can change form, but the total amount stays the same in a closed system.
Yes. But then comes the really profound connection, he explains, simplifying Noether's theorem.
Which is a big deal in physics.
Yeah, a huge deal. These conservation laws, they aren't just random rules. They are direct consequences of symmetries in the universe.
Wait, say that again? Symmetries cause conservation.
Yeah. For example, the fact that the laws of physics don't change over time, they're the same today as they were yesterday and will be tomorrow, that time symmetry.
Yeah, okay.
That's what guarantees the conservation of energy. The fact that physics works the same everywhere in space guarantees conservation of momentum.
Wow. Okay. That takes it from just a rule to something fundamental about the shape of reality. That's breathtaking.
It really is.
Yeah.
But this elegance leads straight into a puzzle. Chapter 5, Past and Future, the Arrow of Time.
Ah, the contradiction. If the fundamental laws have this time symmetry, like you could run the equations forwards or backwards.
A movie of colliding particles looks right either way.
Right. So if the laws are reversible, why isn't reality? Why does my coffee cup shatter but never spontaneously unshatter? Why does time only flow one way for us?
It's a fantastic question. Mm-hmm. And Feynman says the answer isn't in the fundamental forces themselves. It's in statistics.
Like probability.
Exactly. The arrow of time emerges from statistical mechanics, specifically the second law of thermodynamics. Entropy.
Entropy disorder. Things tend to get messier.
Precisely. The universe moves towards statistically more probable states, and those are overwhelmingly disordered or messier states. It's not that unshattering the glass is forbidden by the basic laws.
It's just unbelievably astronomically improbable.
You got it. The universe started in a very highly ordered state, the Big Bang, and it's been moving towards greater disorder ever since. That direction is the arrow of time we perceive. It's a statistical trend.
Okay, that's a big idea to wrap your head around. And just when you think things couldn't get stranger.
Huh. Chapter 6, Quantum Mechanics, the Absurd Reality.
This is where common sense goes completely out the window.
Pretty much. At the subatomic level, things are just weird. Weird particle duality, things being waves and particles at the same time.
And probability. He stresses that it's not just probability because we're ignorant, like flipping a coin. It's
irreducible.
Yeah.
It's baked into reality itself. Mm. You can only predict the probability of finding an electron here or there, not its exact path.
This is the part that always gets me. If it's fundamentally random, how do we even study it? How can there be laws? Can you even give an analogy?
Feynman basically says, don't even try to make it intuitive. You can't.
Seriously, just accept it.
His message is, abandon common sense when it conflicts with experiment. A physicist's job isn't to make reality fit our intuitions. It's to find the mathematical rules, the equations, like Schrödinger's equation, that correctly predict the outcomes of experiments.
Even if the underlying process seems completely paradoxical.
Especially then. It demands real intellectual humility. Trust the data. Trust the math that fits the data, even if it feels absurd.
Which leads perfectly into the last chapter, chapter 7, Seeking New Laws. If the world is this strange, how on earth do we figure out the next set of rules?
He calls the whole process informed guesswork.
Okay, but informed guesswork. Isn't that just a fancy way of saying trial and error, like throwing spaghetti at the wall? What makes it scientific?
That's the crucial difference, the informed part. The guesses aren't random. They have to meet strict constraints.
Like what?
One, they have to be mathematically consistent, self-consistent, no contradictions.
Okay.
Two, they must respect the known symmetries and conservation laws. You can't just propose a theory that violates conservation of energy, for example.
Got it. Builds on what we know.
And three, the absolute killer test. They must be validated by experiment. No exceptions.
If it disagrees with experiment.
It's wrong.
Yeah.
End of story. This chapter really highlights that intellectual humility again. You have to be willing, even eager, to discard your most beautiful, cherished theory if the evidence goes against it.
So we've journeyed from Newton's clockwork universe to the probabilistic weirdness of quantum mechanics. If we try to boil it down, what are the big overarching themes or messages we can take away?
I think there are a few really powerful ones. The first one for me is this idea of mathematical beauty as a guide to truth.
Right. He suggests that the elegance, the simplicity of a theory, it's often a clue, a hint that it might be fundamentally correct.
Yeah, and reflecting on that, it encourages us, maybe in any complex problem, whether it's business or coding or whatever,
look for the simple, elegant solution first.
Kind of. It might just be the right path. Nature often seems to prefer it.
Okay, theme two.
The scientific method is refined guesswork. That guess, compute, compare cycle. It demystifies science, takes it away from being just some rigid, sterile process.
And makes it sound more human, creative.
Exactly. It highlights that intuition, imagination, making bold leaps. These are vital parts of science, provided.
You test them rigorously against reality. Yeah.
Was another one for you.
I think theme three is incredibly relevant today. Embracing uncertainty and doubt as a Ricu.
Ah, yes. The idea that true knowledge is always provisional.
Yeah.
It's okay to be wrong. In fact, it's essential to progress.
It's the strength of science, not its weakness. It means we can make the best decision now based on solid evidence.
Let's stay flexible. Ready to change our minds completely if better evidence comes along. No dogma.
Which connects to the fourth theme, maybe? Reality is counterintuitive.
Definitely. Nature just isn't obligated to make sense according to our everyday experience or common sense.
Especially at the quantum level.
Or even with things like relativity. So it demands humility. Prioritize the evidence, what we actually observe, over our ingrained biases or what feels comfortable.
Feynman was brilliant at summing these ideas up in memorable lines. The source material pulled out a few key ones.
Yeah, he had a real knack for the perfect phrase.
The first one really captures that commitment to evidence. If it disagrees with experiment, it is wrong.
Bam. Simple. Direct. Doesn't matter how smart you are, who came up with the theory. If the data says no, it's no.
The ultimate authority is reality itself, not ego.
Then there's this one, which is so important for just thinking clearly. The first principle is that you must not fool yourself, and you are the easiest person to fool.
Oof. Yeah, that hits home. It's a direct warning against confirmation bias, isn't it?
Totally. You have to be brutally honest. Are you seeking truth or just trying to prove yourself right?
And my personal favorite, maybe because it ties back to that universality and symmetry idea, the same equations have the same solutions.
Ah, yes. That encapsulates so much. The math describing gravity works the same for an apple falling as it does for galaxies colliding billions of light years away.
It unifies everything under the same set of principles. It's profound.
So how do we actually use these ideas? Yeah. Are there real life applications beyond the physics lab?
I think that guess, compute, compare model, yeah, it's actually a pretty universal problem solving framework, don't you think?
How so?
Yeah.
Give an example.
Okay, say you're trying to improve something in your business or maybe even fix a recurring argument in a relationship.
Right.
You could form a hypothesis. If I change this variable, I predict this outcome. Guess. Then you model it out, think through the likely consequences of compute. And then you try it, you implement the change for a set period and carefully observe the results. Compare. Oh.
So it becomes a data-driven, iterative process instead of just random flailing.
Exactly. Less guessing, more. Refined guessing.
I like that. And what about the symmetry idea? How does that apply?
Well, it encourages first principles thinking instead of just copying what someone else does, like a competitor strategy.
Which might not work for you anyway.
Right. Instead, you look for the fundamental constraints, the conservation laws of your system. What are the absolute non-negotiables? In business, maybe it's cash flow. In habit formation, maybe it's limited willpower.
So find the underlying rules, the symmetries of your specific situation.
And build your solutions based on those truths rather than just surface-level imitation. It leads to more robust, tailored solutions.
And it fosters that intellectual humility we keep mentioning. A leader using this approach makes decisions confidently based on current data.
But is always ready to say, huh, new evidence. Okay, let's adapt. Or even, we actually don't know the answer to that yet. Let's design an experiment.
Yeah, it's a powerful model for dealing with the uncertainty inherent in, well, everything.
Okay, final takeaways. As we wrap up, what was the most surprising thing or the biggest insight you took from revisiting Feynman's perspective here?
For me, honestly, it's the sheer depth and power he reveals in the concept of symmetry. The way it's not just about visual patterns, but how these abstract principles of invariance, like laws being the same over time, literally dictate concrete physical laws like energy conservation.
It connects the abstract and the concrete in a really fundamental way.
It really does. It makes the universe feel less like a collection of arbitrary rules and more like an elegantly structured system. What about you?
I think for me, it's the enduring message about the process of science, that blend of rigorous logic and wild imagination, the idea that the universe actually rewards this combination of careful observation, clear thinking, and creative guesswork.
The refined guesswork.
Yeah. It's a celebration, really, of our human ability to figure things out, to comprehend this underlying order, even when it's deeply weird and counterintuitive.
Yeah.
It's kind of an invitation to enjoy the process of discovery itself.
Beautifully put. It's about the joy of finding things out.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.